Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Whoa, baby! Whoa, Bodie!
Lynn Casper. Chicago Cubs play-by-play man.
Speaking of iPads,
today
is Steve Cishek's 33rd birthday.
All the latest news and notes from the Cubs.
Ball out of the way. That ball is gone. Number 100. Cubs lead.
Lynn Casper with McNeil and Parkins on 670 The Score.
This hour on The Score brought to you by Sunrise Chevrolet in Glendale Heights, the bright way to buy. Len Casper appears with McNeil and Parkins every Monday at 3 o'clock throughout the baseball season, and it's brought to you by Miracle, the musical inspired by the Chicago Cubs. Shep in for Mac. It's Mac and Parkins with, speaking of iPads, the legend Len Casper. What's up, Len?
How you doing, guys? Do I sound okay?
You sound very good, and I just want to say thank you for working in the non sequitur into the Cubs Sox broadcast last week.
Man, that was like 6 days ago. That's ancient history now. Yeah, I vaguely remember.
Listen, I mean, I texted you off the air, but now we're on the air, and so I wanted to officially thank you for it.
Well, you know, Benetti kind of, I thought, didn't really get the spirit of it. He tried to actually make a James McCann iPad connection. And I think the point of the whole thing was just drop it in there without any connection, right?
Yeah, you won.
Thank you.
You're welcome. In a game that we weren't scoring and there were no official rules, we decided that you beat Jason Benetti at the game.
Well, Len comes on with us once a week. Benetti comes on once maybe a month or so with us. So, yeah, obviously, if it's a toss-up, we're giving the win to Len.
Speaking of iPads, James McCann.
Yeah. I would have gladly handed him the trophy had he been a little more random than I was. But he wasn't.
Actually,
he did a good job blending it in. It didn't really even stand out.
No, not at all, which is why I heard from way more people about you than him. And so we'll have to find a new non sequitur for when the games are on the south side. But
about doing that is there's a little risk because not everyone is in on the joke. So there are definitely people out there who are thinking, did Casper have a stroke last inning, or what? What in the world is going on? So, see, you got to put something on the line to make a bit really work.
Did you let JD know ahead of time?
I didn't tell him specifically. I just said I am going to drop in something very random, and you'll know when it happens.
Did he?
He kind of chuckled. Yeah, I think okay. He got it. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Good. Because yeah, I enjoy, and you're right. Like you laid it out there on the line. But you told us last time that at this stage of your life and career, you don't have too many F's to give anymore, Len.
Well, I probably have more than I let on, but that's the kind of thing that's fun for me. And you know, if you can't have a little 5 second diversion, it's kind of a wink, wink, nod, nod to some friends. Then what's the point in doing the job, right?
100% agreed. There was a lot in that series against the Mets. What do you think you'll take from that series, if anything?
Pete Alonso looks like one of the best hitters I've ever seen. I think that's honestly one of the first places I go. He's got a chance to be really, really good. He already is. I like Jeff McNeil a lot. I don't love their lineup, but those two guys have a chance to be a pretty good 1-2 tandem. You know, the Baez home run yesterday really saved the Cubs' bacon, so to speak, because you lose that game 3 out of 4 would have really hurt. That's not a series you want to lose. It's really not a series you prefer to split, but considering the Cubs, I think, are playing kind of their loosest baseball of the season, and that's not in a good way. I think in the end, to be 3-3 on this homestand, they probably are fortunate.
Yeah, it's that you walk out with a loss yesterday. You're sitting 2-4 and in second place, and the script is entirely flipped on it. On the Baez homer yesterday, and on the Frazier one, the Todd Frazier one on Saturday as well. neither of those looked like off the bat to me that they had a chance of going out. Now, I wasn't at the park. Did the wind help them that much, or is that the old the Super Bowl that's being thrown around this year?
I just assume every deep fly ball is a home run. I think Frazier hit one off the wall for a double. I was surprised it stayed in. We've seen so many off-balance swings. Javi had one the other day, not yesterday, but I think it was Thursday night, where it was just a lunging kind of off the end of the bat swing, and the ball got out to left center, I believe. And there are just a lot of home runs that I don't think would have been home runs in years past. Now, again, guys like Alonso and generally Baez, those guys are going to hit their home runs, but it's, you know, the Ketel Martes of the world. And even Tommy La Stella, who's a great hitter, but I never thought he was a 25 to 30 homer guy, and that's probably what he'll be this year.
That is insane. Tommy La Stella hitting 30 home runs.
It can happen. He's on that pace.
We're talking to Len Casper here on The Score. We spent a decent part of the start of the show talking about Jose Quintana, and obviously this is just the thing that Sox fans have an opinion on, Cubs fans have an opinion on. We talked to you about the trade at the time a week or two ago. Oh, actually, it was last week when the series was happening. But do you have any theories as to just why he's been worse with the Cubs than he was with the Sox in the big picture?
Well, I think when you do have this conversation in what has been a bad stretch for him, you have recency bias for sure. And you're right. You know, the numbers say that he's been about a half a run worse in terms of his ERA as a Cub than he was with the White Sox. A lot of that is certainly in the last 2 years. I thought he was absolutely terrific at the end of 2017 and ended up with two of the biggest starts the Cubs had in the second half, including his debut with the Cubs in Baltimore, and then he had another great game in Milwaukee later that summer. So I think he helped, you know, the Cubs get to where they got to in 2017. I think durability matters. But right now, he's been basically a league average pitcher, and I think that everyone had higher hopes. I think he did, too. Fortunately, the Cubs have Cole Hamels and John Lester, and when healthy, Kyle Hendricks. Darvish has been better here of late, but I think everyone would say that it's nuanced. He hasn't been bad, but he hasn't been good enough to this point. And the best thing you can say about him is he's taken the ball every fifth day and generally given them a chance to win. But I think fewer starts like he had his last time out would be good. The one big disappointment I think he would tell you if you had him on right now is the big inning has really been his nemesis.
Yep.
He's had a lot of starts where he'll go six innings, and five of those six innings are crisp. You know, maybe one or two base runners, and then he's got one inning where he gives up four or five runs, and it feels like that sequence kind of ruins his outing.
Has he ever mentioned anything, whether it's scrums after the game or any of it that you've been a part of? His strikeout rate goes up a full one strikeout per nine innings since he's been traded from the Sox to the Cubs. With that, usually your ERA goes down, other numbers go down, and you're a better pitcher. But he's also walking more guys. Is it kind of been like a philosophical change of what he's trying to accomplish on the mound from what you've understood or seen?
I think he's gone away from his sinker, and like just about every pitcher in baseball has worked up in the zone more often, and that means more strikeouts. You're pitching away from launch angle. But if you miss your spot up in the zone, you're going to give up some home runs. You know, I think the command part of it is certainly the biggest concern. You want him to throw more strikes because the last thing you want to do is give up the three-run homer, and that has bitten him at times. But for me, you know, he has to throw the ball where he needs to throw it because he's not really a stuff guy per se. I think the changeup this year, the potential is there for that to be a really good third pitch. He has used it a lot more this season than in the past. But it feels like there are times when he's not fully committed to that pitch and either shakes it off or doesn't throw a fully convicted changeup. But that's one pitch I know Tommy Hotovy really likes from Q, and one that we may see more often as time moves along.
Talking with Len Casper, McNeil and Parkins with Shep in on The Score. What's impressed you most with Adbert Alzolay?
Well, his poise, I mean, he really has a presence on the mound, very aggressive, gets the ball, wants to throw it. The stuff we know is very good, but he spent a long time in the minor leagues getting to this point, and I think he is poised to take full advantage of it, and I think everyone's excited to see him in a starting role tomorrow. In terms of highlights of the homestand, that's absolutely number one for me. I love how his teammates kind of are ribbing him a little bit for the tip of the cap to the fans, but I get it, and I think they get it too, and I think they like him a lot, or they wouldn't be ribbing him publicly the way they are with the tip of the cap when they won the game the other night, and then Caratini when he made that great defensive play.
It's a hell of a series. I mean, Lester versus Tehran tonight, Alzolay tomorrow, Darvish against Keuchel, and then Tyler Chatwood getting a start. There's storylines galore in this series.
Yeah, and the Braves score a lot of runs. One of the best offenses in the league, one of the best players in the league, and Freddie Freeman. They've got Acuna, who's 21. They've got Albies, who's 22. They've got this kid, Austin Riley, who's 22. It should be a lot of fun. This could be a playoff preview.
Len, does it feel to you like just big picture, and maybe it's not fair to ask this, given what you said, they're playing the loosest baseball so far this season, but do the Cubs feel like a World Series caliber team to you?
Not yet. I think when Kimbrel gets here, that'll help the bullpen kind of sort itself out. You definitely want Kyle Hendricks back and healthy and pitching every 5 days. But offensively, the overall kind of assessment, I think, is that it's good. It has a chance to be better. They rank, I think, fifth in the league right now in runs scored. We've talked about runners in scoring position. You know, I'm not sure how much that will improve, but they do hit the ball out of the ballpark, and I think their ability to get on base is their number one asset. So I think they're definitely a playoff-caliber team. They may be the best team in their division. Right now, I don't think on paper they stack up to the Dodgers. I'm not sure any other National League team does. It's a four-game series. It's the middle of the year. You know, you can't really set everything up the way you want to in terms of starting over with your rotation, but having Lester pitch game one is pretty ideal. So let's see how they stack up against the Braves at home in the end of June.
Is it going to, from your understanding, is this going to be second base for the foreseeable future, a combination of Bodie, Russell, and Descalso? Or is Joe Maddon and company hoping for someone to kind of emerge there and get regular starts there?
I think a little bit of both, Shep. All those guys have gotten reps. He really wants to get Descalso going, and you can't do it with a guy not playing. So I think he'll try to get him in there for a couple of starts this week against certain right-handers where he likes the matchup. But I think David Bodie has really kind of emerged as a guy Joe likes on the field a lot. Russell offensively lately has not been very good. I think the hand is still bothering him. He has let go of the bat on several occasions and just has not looked very comfortable. But he catches a ball, and defensively, you really like having him somewhere on the field. Maybe Baez gets a day off this week, and that gets Russell some reps at shortstop. But, yeah, I think it's a combination of those three, and I think Joe would be very open to the idea of one guy grabbing it.
Did you read Sahadev's piece on Ian Happ?
I skimmed it today, yes.
Yeah,
I did.
I thought it was interesting. Like, they were very specific in what they want him to be working on, and a lot of his quotes seemed to me to be of the mindset of, like, yeah, I want to be there. Obviously, I think I should be there. And it seemed to me like he was kind of in conflict with the reason of his demotion, because he's the guy that they were depending on, whether it was at second base, center field, or a combination of the two. That power is something that the offense could obviously use.
I agree with you. And in terms of his mindset, I can only base it on what I read. And like you, you know, a lot of his quotes were about getting back to Chicago and being a Chicago Cub and being a big leaguer. And what I found most interesting is just the idea of, you know, he's working on some very specific things. So in some ways, as we look at his numbers and his results, it may not be about that as much as what the swing looks like and what the hitting instructors and what the front office sees in terms of those at-bats, and if the tweaks that he's made to his swing will translate at this level. The fact that they have waited until the middle of the year and probably beyond, to me, says that there were some significant changes that needed to be made. I think he will be a part of this team here in 2019 and could actually be a big part of it. It remains to be seen. I don't think it's as a second baseman, to get back to our previous conversation. You know, he's still more probably an outfielder than an infielder. But that bat does play when Ian Happ is in a groove at this level. And I think he's going to be a productive big leaguer. It's just a matter of when.
And you expect Kimbrel by the weekend?
At this point, with all else remaining, you know, going well and no setbacks, I think Kimbrel will be here by the latest by the weekend against the Reds in Cincinnati, and maybe as early as Thursday. They may just wait till the Cubs hit the road. We'll see. I would imagine by the end of the week.
What kind of jump or, I don't know, maybe ignition, whatever you want to call it, would the Cubs get from getting a closer in Kimbrel? Because it's their offense has been struggling at times. Second base offensive production has been struggling there. Like, you've seen it when Quintana was dealt for, the Cubs go on a run in 17. A closer, a sure thing at the back end of the game, how much does that kind of either breathe life or kind of ignite the fires for this team?
Well, the one obvious thing it does is it makes it an eight-inning game in terms of your bullpen. So the Stropes and C-Shecks of the world, you know, now they're in the seventh and the eighth instead of the eighth and the ninth. Brandon Kinster, guys like that. Joe knows that Kimbrel's the guy you use in the ninth. I would imagine he won't stretch him beyond an inning early on. He may not want to go back-to-back too often early on. So I think even when you're trailing, and you're not scoring a lot of runs, you're down 2-1 or 3-2, maybe you can keep a game in check and closer and give your offense a chance to come back late, knowing that you've got that big-time closer at the end. The psychological stuff, I think it does matter because they think it matters in the clubhouse. I just don't know how to quantify that in terms of a record or if it helps anybody hit the ball better at the plate. I don't know if we could really say that on the outside looking in. But I think guys say that and they feel it. So whatever effect it has, it just gives them maybe an extra bounce in their step.
Great stuff, Len. Have a good series. It should be a fun one. Thank you. Thank you.
Speaking of iPads, I'll talk to you next week.
You're the man. That is Len Casper for his normal appearance. McNeil and Parkins on the score. Reports now coming out of New York. There will be no suspensions or firings for Mickey Callaway or Jason Vargas, just fines for both of them.
Yeah, it seems, I don't know. I'm with you on the Vargas thing. Like, you confront physically or try to intimidate physically a media member, there should be punishment to that. And I guess there's a fine that goes along with it, but even if it's a starting pitcher on an off day not being at the ballpark, I think that it looks better if you do that and hand that out instead of if you don't.
It's not the biggest deal in the world,
right?
Obviously. I just, if it happened how it's been reported that it happened, that Vargas said, "I will F you up, bro," just that seems to be a fairly easy line in the sand to draw that you can't be making physical threats towards members of the media.
Yeah, it seems like it's a bad taste and
so
bad idea of that. I'm surprised it's not even just a one game suspension. That you see him working out before the game and he goes home. Like, he goes home during the actual playing of the game. Like, it wouldn't be hard to do, especially with a pitcher on an off day. I'm surprised by that a little bit, but I'm not blown to pieces over it and all that worried about it, but it's just strange to me.
Yeah, I agree. Call me old school. It just doesn't seem like something you should do. This segment, by the way, brought to you by Rental Max, Chicagoland's equipment rental, contractors, and industrial businesses. Will you need rent-reliable equipment tomorrow? Visit or call one of their 8 Chicago area locations staffed with experienced rental equipment experts, and Rental Max will deliver to your site on time, on budget. Visit rentalmax.com. Big rule change coming. I said it was going to be a disaster at the time. We're learning more about it, and I think it's going to be even worse than I thought. We'll get into that coming up. The Hawks' third overall pick, Kirby Dock, will be in studio in 40 minutes on the score.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
So many elements to this thing. If it was just real simple and everybody said, replay everything, then I think everybody would probably want that if it was easy. But there's just so many dynamics to it. There's so many moving parts. The only thing I care about is making sure that in the end, we get the right call.
That's Matt Nagy on the new pass interference rule in the NFL. Welcome back. McNeil and Parkins on the score. Shep in for Mac. Bottom of the hour on the score, brought to you by Northwestern Football. Join Coach Fitz and the 17th-ranked Cats this fall at Ryan Field. Matchups include Ohio State, Michigan State, and Iowa. Single-game tickets on sale now at nusports.com. I assume season tickets are as well. You heard the promo during that break there, the McNeil and Parkins golf outing. We just put it on sale. Foursomes are filling up. Still plenty of room, though. Get your group together. August 5th, Seven Bridges. 100% of proceeds go to the Turning Point Autism Foundation. We're going to be out there broadcasting all day. Meal is included. There's prizes. There will be friends of the station, local celebrities, that whole thing. It's going to be a blast. It's an amazing course. Take a half day. It's $200 for an individual, $750 for a foursome. Come on out and have some fun and support a great cause. That is August 5th, the return of the Score Celebrity Golf Outing.
So are you going to do a foursome? Are you and three buddies going to do it? Or are you going to be bouncing around? You decided your plan of action yet for this?
My plan is to be out on the course and drinking, hopefully.
I don't think you need to be in a foursome or can just be driving around in the cart. I think but either I don't accomplishes
wanna,
that.
Yeah, but I don't want to play with just one foursome. I want to bounce around.
Yeah, find your favorite hole and play it six or seven times and feel better about yourself.
So hopefully my friends get together and can get out of work and pull together and get a foursome to come on out so that my crew can be represented out here. I'm hopeful that that's going to work out. But yeah, I don't think I'll get a full 18 in, but my goal is to bring my clubs and, you know, just bounce around group to group, cocktails in hand, and gamble, hopefully with proceeds either going to my pocket or most likely the Turning Point Autism Foundation.
Yeah, it seems like a solid plan to me.
Yeah.
It was one of my favorite events that we've done annually, and at one of them I was with Jay Zawoski. We were golfing, and we had two guys that were with us, a father and his son, and this son goes to hit his approach on, I don't know which hole it was, but you're facing the clubhouse, and you have to go over a water barrier to get to the green, and you're looking at the clubhouse, and he skins it, so it's flying like 6 feet off the ground, maybe at its very peak, but it's a line drive, and it starts to come down, and I mean, it hits a goose straight on in the side of like where the neck hit, like it hits right there, and you just hear the thud. And then you hear this goose just make the saddest sound of I almost died laughing so hard. This kid felt so bad. He felt terrible. And it's any
other.
Did
the goose live?
It lived, but it was making this incredibly painful noise the entire time. And I'm like, oh my God, the kid felt terrible. Like he's sitting there thinking, oh my God, I might have killed a goose. Oh my goodness, what the heck did I just do? And I could not breathe. I was laughing so hard just off the way, everything that went down and went straight into it was.
Goose is dead.
I think Goose lived, maybe not for long after, but lived long enough to fly off. But yeah, that's one of the, I always enjoy, especially golfing with Jay at this event specifically.
So that's the memory we have to top.
Yes, we have to, I'm not into being cruel to animals, but that was one case where it broke a laugh out of me.
Mark that,
I'll admit.
Please. Yeah. Normally,
controversial stance.
Normally, you're not cool with being cruel to animals, but in that case, you were willing to laugh.
An individual
at the animal's
goose.
Pain.
Yeah.
Yeah, an individual.
Geese are kind of a pain in the ass anyway. So
sure. So one of them could go for your
or
laughter.
At least take a golf ball to the chin. Sure.
That's what happened. It was the throat. Now, yeah, okay. I enjoy
but
that.
But no, it's an awesome event. It's a great event. It benefits a fantastic cause, and it's an excuse for all of us from the station to get out, raise some money for a fantastic cause and turning points, and it should be a fun day.
670thescore.com/golfouting. You can hang out with the score, you can donate some money, and you may see a goose take a Titleist off the larynx.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you've just sold this event. We're going to be sold out by tomorrow.
I think so.
670thescore.com/golfouting is where you can get all of your information. So, did you read Monday morning quarterback today?
I didn't read it today, no. But okay. If it's in reference to the pass interference call, Mike Florio and his website at Pro Football Talk also did a fantastic write-up of the breakdown of how this pass interference review is going to be called and the confusion that's already around it.
So Rich Eisen is guest writing. Peter King takes a month off in the offseason and brings in guest columnists. And Rich Eisen was writing it, and his lead was probably 1,500 words on the off-season symposium for all the broadcast partners, where they get together with the head of officiating to talk about the new rules and explain things so that the broadcast partners can explain the rules to the viewers and the fans, right? So Rich Eisen says NFL Network's there, CBS is there, ESPN's there, NBC, all of the broadcasting bigwigs, and Al Riveron, the director of officiating, is giving a two-hour presentation on what went right and what went wrong last year and the new rules for this offseason, obviously with the biggest change being pass interference is now reviewable, including pass interferences that are not called on the field, so that for the first time in football history, we can challenge penalties that were not called, which I think is ludicrous. Said so at the time, thought it was a huge overreaction to the NFC Championship game. So Eisen, his lead anecdote is actually not the NFC Championship game, the Saints-Rams call. It is the Week 15 Thursday night Chiefs-Chargers game. And if you don't remember it, it's totally fine. Chargers won the game in Arrowhead. And what happened there, it was 3rd and 10 down near the goal line inside the 15. And throw a pass. And Chiefs' Kendall Fuller breaks it up. Gets called for defensive pass interference, new set of downs, Chargers get it, basically no time left, and they get it, first and goal from the one, two plays later, score a touchdown, win the game. Great game, great finish, controversial penalty at the time, whatever. So they're going through the examples, and they use that one as the main play outside of the NFC Championship game to highlight the possible ramifications. And what Eisen said was they would put a play on the board, and they would say, so do you think this should be overturned or call stands? And he said there was a 50-50 split on every video they put up. Every call through the it was all of these experts, all these broadcasters, after being explained the rule, there was never a consensus on it. And it finishes with this play in the Chiefs-Chargers game. And Al Riveron puts it up, and so he goes, so what do you think? Do you think it should be defensive pass interference stands or pick up the flag? And again, the room is 50-50 split, and Al Riveron says, with the new rule, how this play will be called if it's called correctly, offsetting pass interference penalties that Mike Williams of the Chargers initiated contact with Kendall Fuller, who then, when he came back, committed defensive pass interference, so that there should have been offensive pass interference and defensive pass interference, replay the down, only 8 seconds left, 3rd and 10 from whatever it was, the 14-yard line. And he said, Eisen said the room was just shocked because they had not even considered the possibility that a second penalty could be assessed through instant replay. And I'm telling you, they've given themselves the escape hatch that this is a provisional one-year rule and it could be scrapped at the end of 2019. I don't see any way that this goes well. Because, yes, everybody wants the egregious wrongs to be righted. But that is the worst no-call we've ever seen in modern football history. That is rare. And you're now going to have, for every one of those, you're going to have 50 debatable half-and-half.
Half-and-half at bat. Like, yes. So,
judgment calls analyzed through Zapruder film slow motion, where 50% of the room thinks it's intentional, 50% thinks there should be no flag, and you're going to have offsetting penalties, and you're going to have mass confusion, and you're going to have the game stalled. I really think they just overreacted to a bad play. They should scrap this before the season starts. Everyone should read Rich Eisen's column today. It is eye-opening for the potential for how bad this could be.
Well, there's that of it, but it's also, you kind of pointed there of, oh, it's they could scrap it after 1 year. This is going to work just like everything else with replay has worked. They could scrap it if it goes horribly. NFL is not going to admit that anything that they do or come up with is a bad idea or a bad plan. If anything, it's only going to grow off of this. That's, they've shown it time and time again with replay. No matter how much it gets into the, okay, when it first starts in the league, it's just to make sure that we don't get the completely ridiculous calls wrong. What was it, the Vinny Testaverde play where his knee's down and they ruled it a touchdown or whatever it was that helped lead to replay getting pushed back in 99 or 2000? Like, there's so much of, oh, well, yeah, they can right the wrong and they can get rid of it after next year. No, it's only going to grow. Like, this rule is not going to go. I would be absolutely stunned just because of kind of the hard stance that the NFL takes. But I'm with you. Like, I look at this. How is that more enjoyable for a football fan? Oh, well, yeah, my team, they might have gotten screwed or shafted, or they might not have. Let's go and look at this film for 3 minutes or 4 minutes, break it down, learn nothing more than what we knew in real time. And, okay, it eliminates the one in a million chance that you get in New Orleans in an NFC championship game from this past year. But it's just going to add on the oddness and the weirdness and the replay and the looking at things that you don't even know what you're looking at. And you're going to be left with more questions, far more questions at the end than you are at the start.
It's just a question of what do you want out of your sports viewing experience. If you are an absolutist and your thing is, I just want it right. I don't care about flow, the pleasure of the game, and all of that. I would say, okay, I understand. If I felt like we were getting 100% of the calls that are reviewed correct. But every week, I see Mike Pereira or Dean Blandino coming in and saying that they would have called something differently based on an official's call that was made during the game. There's no consensus with this stuff. The vast majority of these calls are not nearly as black and white as the NFC Championship game. So if we're still going to have debate on the back end of it, then I don't know who's benefiting from this.
Well, there's that. Ultimately, do you think replay is good for sports? Not just football, but replay as a whole. Is it good for sports?
It is a very slight net positive. I used to think it was an overwhelming net positive. Now I think it's more like 60-40 positive.
I don't even think it's that much 60-40. Like, it's a toss-up at best to me. Because it's, okay, yep, you rule out the egregious and everyone's for that and that's good. But you have so. What's the one good thing that's come of baseball with their added replay? It's okay, the play at second base now when Javier Baez is sliding in and avoiding a tag, that's become something because it was an out for years and years and decades because as long as the ball beat the runner, the runner's going to get called out. Now you can break that down and it makes the actual slides into bases interesting compared to what they used to be, where it's just an automatic out if the ball beats you.
Right.
Okay, so it's added something there. But then you're reviewing, oh, was he safe at first base? Is his foot down? Oh, my goodness, let's break this down for 3 minutes or 4 minutes and try to decide if the base runner was actually there when the call that there obviously isn't enough to overturn it with satisfaction or enough evidence that you're willing to go and stand on. Like, I just think that it's the viewing part. It's taken so much out of that for me. And okay, you might be able to break it down to the 1,000th of a second and get it just on the right part there. But I'm realizing that I'm not an absolutist when it comes to sports in that sense. And I'm not an absolutist in my sports viewing experience. And the more replay I see, the more and more really kind of sick and tired of it that I get, except for the completely egregious calls.
And there's no way to say we only want to do it in the egregious calls.
Correct.
Because in the moment, the guys are going to try to get something overturned, whether it be on a technicality, whether it be 60-40, or whether it's, say, hey, this ref, this umpire, this official is going to call it in my favor. Maybe he will, maybe he won't, so I'll just take a gamble. That's the thing about football. And that's why I honestly think this is an appalling idea, because it's the first time we're going to be able to officiate games off of replay. Everything else was he inbounds, out of bounds? Was it a catch? Was it not a catch? It was about the action of the players on the field. Now it's going to be, you should have thrown a penalty here. Go back and watch it. And you're going to be able to slow down like you do for catch, no catch, for pass interference. That is such a ridiculous leap off of one play. And I get it. What happened in the NFC Championship game was egregious, and that will never happen again as long as this happens. But they get that call right 99.8% of the time. So the sound that Tanny played coming in, where Matt Nagy said all he cares about is them getting it right, that's really easy to say. Because there's going to be, guaranteed, there's going to be a call that gets overturned against the Bears where replay will have said they got it right and Matt Nagy will disagree with their interpretation of the replay.
Yeah.
Like there, it is no doubt. A guarantee that it'll happen.
But prepare yourself, Danny, because it's pass interference this year. I would be very surprised if not 4 or 5 years from now you're looking at it and you're breaking down offensive line play and, oh, well, my guy was held. And they only go more in depth on it. Like, this is only a starting point of penalties being reviewed because it's
that would
the easiest.
Be such a mistake.
It would be, but it's not going the other way. It's not going away. It's going to change to that way a heck of a lot quicker than it's going to go back to the old ways of it not existing.
And the texter says, you guys are totally overreacting. The goal is to try to get it right. If you can take a second look, why wouldn't you? Replay has been great for sports. What are you talking about? You sound crazy. I'm surprised.
Has it been? Because not half the time, that's speaking out of turn a little bit. But a large amount of the time when you watch, things get overturned. And you're like, I don't know. How many times do you leave watching an NFL game between two teams that you don't necessarily care about, and there's a play, and you say, yep, for sure, that's getting overturned. It's clear as day, and they come back and say, nope, call stands. Everything was called correctly, and you're like, wait, what? There's no way of that.
Yeah,
and half the time, it doesn't feel like it works anyway.
And a texter says, I'm surprised that you're only 60-40 on it, given the gambling nature of this show. Again, if at the end of every replay, I felt like they made the call correctly, I would not have nearly as big of a problem with replay as I do. The problem with replay now is that it still is subjective. We have trained officials who literally wrote the rules, right? Mike Pereira and Dean Blandino literally rewrote the catch rule.
Mm-hmm.
And then they are on Fox questioning their colleagues and saying that they would have called plays differently. And there have been plays where Pereira and Blandino have disagreed on it. So if there's no consensus, if it's not black or white, like inbounds, out of bounds, ball on the ground, ball not on the ground, how the hell are you going to bring that subjectivity into instant replay only to slow the game down and still have us have debate? It's crazy to me. And I just read Rich Eisen's column because it's eye-opening. Because what my argument at the time was, there's going to be an unintended consequence of this. I don't know what it's going to be. And that's just the first one that we've come up with. That, oh, actually, that could be offsetting penalties, and they could add it. So that means that the team that challenges the play, John Fox, right? Packers game.
Wins the challenge, but loses ultimately the result.
Exactly. Exactly.
You're not charged a timeout. Congratulations. Yeah. Your opponent has scored a touchdown.
Right. It was actually offensive pass interference before it was defensive pass interference. Now it's your ball. Like, it's just, it is going to be absolute chaos. And it's all in the name of getting it right. And I honestly don't think we're going to get anything more correct.
Yeah. If I knew that, yes, 100% of calls will be right, then I'd have a different stance on this. But not for a second do I even believe that you're getting it right. Oh, no, everything's going to be called perfectly now. No, it's not, because it hasn't been up to this point. So get the heck out of here with that.
The Blackhawks' third overall pick, Kirby Dach, is going to be in studio at 4 o'clock. People want to react to this, and might have to bet on Lucas Giolito again tonight. It didn't work out so well for me last time. It's Mack and Parkins on the Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Cash is brought out and stacked 15 minutes before the van does the pickup. That is when you hit. A Monday morning, after a four-game stand with New York, 60,000 beers, food, merchandise, total haul, $3.5 million. Taking down the Cathedral of Boston. Priceless.
White Sox, Red Sox, three-game series in the Cathedral of Boston with Lucas Giolito, a plus 150 underdog again tonight. Does he bounce back? Do we bet Giolito? We're about to get $1,000 tonight in the show pot when Giannis wins MVP. Tonight's the night.
spend it all on Giolito this evening.
Turn it into 1,500.
Did that video that you liked so much last week of Wilson Contreras and Joe Maddon discussing what Lucas Giolito is going to try to do, does that leaking out, does that show the game plan to the Red Sox? And is that just a sucker bet? Good point. Is the scouting report out? Did the Red Sox learn something by that video that was posted by, I believe it was NBC Sports Chicago, of Joe Maddon saying, this is what Giolito's going to do. Go hammer it, Willie. And, oh, Willie did.
Have the Red Sox figured out what they're saying in the video?
Yes, exactly. Nice.
Well, they actually saw the video. They didn't hear what audio we played back.
They had the subtitles. They weren't listening. I'll point two thumbs on that one, boys. He's going to bounce back, right, Tanny? This is an easy win for the White Sox.
Oh, God. Just give me the playoffs.
How much money? Okay. Funny guy over there. Tanny, before the show, was asking how much money is going to be in the cash room after a three-game series with the White Sox. I think the two Lindas and their husbands have moved on from it, though. They've got better security in the cash room nowadays, Tanny.
Well, I would think they would be fired after the mishap that happened under their watch in the movie The Town.
That's what I'm saying. It cannot possibly be any worse. But yeah, your White Sox are going to come through. I'm feeling good. I'll bet personally on Giolito.
I'm sorry, everyone. To all the White Sox fan listeners, I'm really sorry.
You think that's the problem? You think it was me last time betting against my squad? The old reverse jinx?
Well, Joe Maddon did have the great, hit the ball out of the ballpark. That's great, great coaching, great managing.
He's a genius, Tanny.
That's right. You hit those low pitches and elevate them. Go do that, Wilson. Okay, will do. I'll hit two home runs off of Lucas Giolito. That's a game plan. Why don't more managers do that?
I'm just kind of bummed. I don't know if we're going to get to see Eloy in left field this week, though. I'm not sure what they're going to do with John Jay coming up. So it'll be interesting. I haven't seen a lineup yet, but we'll have to wait and see.
I like Eloy, but my goodness, watching Eloy play left field at Fenway Park, that could be a damn adventure.
I kind of want to see it, though.
I mean, Houston, I do too. Houston was fun enough with the Crawford boxes and whatever else out there. Fenway and the big green monster. Sign me up for 3 days of that.
Something else I might have been accidentally right on with the White Sox we'll get into in a little bit, but Kirby Dach just walked in, third overall pick of the Blackhawks. He pulls up a chair with Shep and I next on the score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.